We're looking on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, and what we've been discussing is where, you know, she has one claim and there's a counterclaim, and who do we believe? The Mishnah, the second Mishnah on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, is going to take this a step further. And the Mishnah is going to record a machlokes between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. Is a woman believed with her claim, or is she not believed with her claim? This Mishnah has nothing to do with Dine Mominos. Until now, we've been dealing with a dispute about the ksuba. Does he pay Masayim? Does he pay Mona? Perhaps it's a Mekotos. He doesn't have to pay a single dime. All that is in Dine Mominos. Now, we're shifting our discussion in this Mishnah over to Isurim, and specifically to the Isur Zona Lekoin. The Torah tells us at the beginning of Parshas Emor, Isha Zona V'chalol Lo Tikach, that a Kohen is not allowed to marry a Zona. What's a Zona? Who's a Zona? Who qualifies for that wonderful category of being a Zona? It's a woman who is Nivalol L'Posola, which means that she had a relationship with someone who she's not permitted to have a relationship with. For example, let's say she had a relationship with a goy or with a mamzer. Now there's another category which is very similar to mamzer called a nosin. That was a certain nation that Yeshua already put them into the category of psulei kol. Any of the above, and for sure any iser erva, let's say she had a relationship with her own brother, that makes her into a zona. So now, if a Kohen wants to marry a Jewish girl, we have every reason to assume that she's allowed to marry a Kohen. We have no reason to assume that she became disqualified to marry a Kohen, that she became a Zona. But sometimes the circumstances lead us to question, was there something not so kosher here that went on? And what we're going to discuss in a few minutes is the case of an unwed mother. Meaning a girl is a pnuya, she's not married, and she became pregnant. Obviously she had a relationship with a man. We don't believe in immaculate conception. And therefore, who was this man? Was he a mamzer? Was he a nosin? Was he a relative of hers, which means he was an erva? Was he a guy? Later on, we're going to have another case in the Mishnah that you remember we discussed once, Aaron and my living room in Harnof, I don't know if you recall that, where a woman was raped outside of a city, and it all depends upon the population of the city.
Where she was raped,
but it was outside the city, so called the Parsha Ruben Parsha. If it was a city mostly of Goyim, then we assume that the relationship was with a Goy, and therefore Cody's not allowed to marry her. But we're discussing now in this Mishnah a case where we believe that this woman had a relationship. Again, if she's pregnant, then there's no doubt that she had a relationship. But the first part of the Mishnah is going to address the case where it looks like she had a relationship. We don't have any absolute proof positive. But on the assumption that she had a relationship, who was the Boel? Was he someone who passes her lacuna, or someone who's kosher lacuna? So the Mishnah says the following.
And the Zona is not a married woman having relations with another man. That's not a status of Zona?
That would also make her into a Zona, because that would be an Iser Erva, and that would pasal hola kahuna. So for example, if the wife of a Kohen would have an adulterous relationship, there are two reasons why he cannot resume his marriage with her. One is the general reason of a nitma, of sota, and now in addition to that, she's a Zona Lekohen. So the Mishnah says the following. Ra'uha midaberes. Okay, so Brian, you came in a little bit late, so we're looking at the Mishnah on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph right now. We're going to fill in the blanks later on, but right now we're on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, and we're looking at the second Mishnah. Last week we covered the Mishnah about a woman who was found to be a Mukat Eitz. And the question is, does she lose her ksuba? And I noticed last week that many people here were asleep, were totally bored. I guess the subject matter of Mukat Eitz was not very engaging, not very exciting. So I thought, let's try tonight a Mishnah that might possibly, again, I didn't write the Mishnah, so you can't blame me. You know, I didn't write the script, but maybe this
was boring, and this was very difficult.
But again, I still reserve the rights to come back to that, because again, we're going to have a case where a man marries a woman under the assumption she's a besula, and he's going to certainly be mischayev to pay masayim zuz, the full 200 zuz for a besula, and she finds out, he lo and behold, he finds out that she's a mukar eitz. Does a mukar eitz deserve a ksubas masayim? Rabbi Meir says yes, the chachamim say no, a mukar eitz is like a bu'ula, there's no chen, there's no enjoyment of besulin, and therefore she goes down to a mea. What would be according to chachamim if she did not notify him as he went into the marriage that she was a mukar eitz? He was misled. He thought that she was a fine, perfect, healthy specimen of a besula. She deserves masayim. She says, lo mold, he discovers she's a mukar eitz. And there we had a machlokes. According to Rabbi Bar Chama, the whole deal is off. He was shocked, he was surprised, he was thrown off base, he was mocked that there were no basulim, and therefore he doesn't have to pay a dime. Mekach tos. According to the other shittas in the Gemara, no. He has to pay her a mea, according to Chacham and Rabbi Meir, because, you know, she's still in the ballpark. But what happens if he discovers that she's a bu'ula, that she had a relationship with another man? That's why they're no basulin. Then there's one shita that says she still gets a man. There's another shita that says no. Mekach tos. All that was the exciting sugya that I tried to teach unsuccessfully last week. And I couldn't wake up the olam, you know. So I decided maybe on a Wednesday night at 8:30, you know, it's you have to find something a little bit more exciting. So for the time being, we're going to leave that sugya that we started last week up in the air, and hopefully we'll resume. We'll pick it up at some later date, maybe even next week. But let's give it a try here.
Just one question. Sorry. If a man finds that that the woman that he's marrying is not a basura,
right?
Does he have to give her? Does he have to go and give her a kent?
No.
He's happy. It doesn't bother him.
But he may have to write another ksuba, because according to that opinion, that it's a mekach tos. There, and again, we discussed at the very tippy end of the shiur last week, as they were banging on the door here for Myriv, so we tried to get it under the wire. There is one opinion that he's so makpid that he found her to be a ba'ula when he expected her to be a basula that the marriage is off. And that's why the ksuba is a mekach tos, and it's meaningless. She can't collect a dime. However, if he decides that he wants to, you know, resume the relationship, that's fine. But he's going to have to write another ksuba, according to that opinion. According to the other opinion, it's a mekach tos, meaning that the marriage still goes on. He's going to have to give her a divorce if he wants to terminate the marriage. It's not a tos. This is not a marriage under mistaken, a das. But there's a tos in the das of the ksuba, of the das of mischai for the ksuba. And that's what I was trying very hard to explain last week, that there are two halachas of das with regard to marriage. One is the das for the ksuba, and the other is the das for the marriage. So, for example, when I function from time to time, they call upon me for the great honor of being Masada Kedushin. So I make sure that there are two declarations, so to speak, on the part of the Chassan for Das. One is we sit down in front of two Edim and we explain in front of the two Edim to the Chassan what he's signing on to, what he's committing himself to. I give them a highlight summary of the Ksuv and its contents. And then we do what's called a Kabbalah's Kinyan, in which he's mischayef for everything in the ksuba. That's the das hamischayef for ksuba. Then, when we get under the chuppah, I expect him to say the following words that you're all familiar with. Hare at mekudeshes li, etc. That's a das hamischayef for kiddushin. It's not really a das hamischayef, it's technically a das makna. Even that's not precise. She is really the das makna. His das is das koneh. And he wants to be Konahar as his wife. Again, it's not a Kenyan like when you buy cattle. A husband doesn't own his wife the same way you own your ox. But it's what's called a Kenyan Isur, which means that now she's tied to this Kenyan in such a way that she can't have relations with another man until she gets a get or until he dies, and that breaks up the Kenyan. So the question is, if a man was fooled, and instead of marrying a basula, lo and behold, he finds, he discovers to his chagrin, that she's not a basula, what happens over here? One opinion says the Das HaMaschaya for Ksuba is completely null and void, and therefore he's not chayef to pay the Ksuba, he was fooled. The other opinion says, no. The Das HaMaschayev is not the only thing that's been affected and undermined. Even the very Das Makadesh here for the marriage itself has been affected. So again, to answer your question, Brian, under all circumstances, he's allowed to whatchamacallit, to marry her. Okay? But he may have to write a new ksuba.
Yeah, but at a wedding, I mean, we're living in a very promiscuous society today. A lot of our late shuvah, right? And people get married, right? And you don't want to embarrass him, so you do put in the word basula. You wouldn't put in basula. Because it's not for those kind of things.
So you're asking an excellent question. Does the Rav HaMesader write a ksubas basula when she's not a frum woman? We have no reason to really assume that definitely she's a basula. So I know that Ramosh has tshuvas about it. I don't remember his final opinion on the question. But I'll tell you the truth, Brian. Even if you hear that when they read the ksuba, you know, usually what they do is they mumble a little bit. You know, all of a sudden, I don't know why, all of a sudden the guy who's reading the ksuba has to wipe his mouth. You know, and if you see something like that happen, it's probably a situation like the one you're describing, where we have reason to believe that she's a ba'ula, even though we don't want to publicly declare and humiliate her, so we thump her around, you know?
I remember was asking this, I think, in high school or later, and the answer was, well, you needed aiding in order to give her the new status.
As a bu'ula.
Yeah.
Correct. So even if she's not religious, we still might assume, that's where Moshe goes back and forth, that ain't on them osa bilas obilasnus. A person doesn't get involved in znus. There's a certain minimum moral society, you know, that people live up to. It's a complicated question.
Okay.
So what happened in this case, since Brian is already touching on promiscuity, that's what we're talking about here. But and the question is there evidence that indicates that A, she had a relationship? We're no longer dealing with the ksuba. What we're dealing with now is the possibility of a kohen marrying this woman, because if we assume that she had this relationship, do we go a step further and assume that the person, the man that she had this relationship with, would disqualify her for kohen, for kahuna, would make her into a psul kahuna, which is called a zona. Again, don't mistake it. A lot of people think the word zona means a harlot or a prostitute. That's not what it means in the Torah. Zona means very specific. For example, if a Jewish man, a good Jewish yingle, chas v'shalom, has relations with a good Jewish girl and they weren't married, she's not a zona. You know, a lot of people think she must be a zona. No, she could still marry a kohen. But the problem is that once she had this relationship, we begin to suspect that maybe she had a relationship with a guy. If there's reason to suspect, as we'll soon see, that she had a relationship with a guy, she's never allowed to marry a kohen. If she had a relationship with an erva, if she had a relationship with a mamzer, let's say that you little Jewish boy was a mamzer, she is now psul lakuna, and that's called a zona. So now we have to decide, what are the circumstances that, you know, with the smoke, there's fire, that lead us to suspect that she had a relationship? So this Mishnah is broken down into two parts, what we call the Reisha and the Seifa. The Reisha of the Mishnah is called Ra'ua Midaberes. We'll speak about that in just a minute, what that means. The Seifa is a little bit easier, called Ra'ua Me'uberes. She's very fat, you know, she's pregnant. She's about to give birth. The difference is that in the Sefer, for sure she had a relationship. And we don't know who that man, who's the father of this child. Now again, who's the father of this child is a tremendous question. I'll look, that has many ramifications. It has to do with support, and it has to do with whether or not he has the right to deny that he's... There are many different ramifications. We're only focused on one issue tonight. Can a Kohen marry this woman? Okay? So that's a pregnant woman who's unwed. What happened in the Reisha? The Reisha says, Ra'ua Midaberes. What does that mean? Literally, it means she was speaking. Meaning, she was speaking with a man. Okay, are we going to say that every woman that speaks to a man, we assume that she had a relationship with him? She had an intimacy with him? So we're going to see in the Gemara two possible explanations for Medaberes. One explanation is that Medaberes means she was speaking with a man in a very private place. And what's that called in halacha when a woman and a man are together in a private place? Yichud. So Medaberes means miyuchedes. She had a yichud, not like a chassid who has yichud with the Rebbe, yichidus. She had yichud, she had yichidus with a man. And now, the assumption might be that when a woman goes into a private place with a man, that's enough to wonder, maybe she had a relationship. The other Mandiover says that the word medaberes in this context means nivala, that the two witnesses testified, not that she just went into a private place with a man, but that the witnesses actually saw the be'ilah, but they can't identify the boel. The boel is gone. We say in Yiddish, erat oinlaf, and he ran away. So we can't find him, we can't track him down. He's a faceless, anonymous person. And now Allah has to decide, can a Kohen marry this woman who had a relationship out of wedlock with a man, and we don't know who the man is? The only problem is that to say that the word medaberes means nivala, that's a stretch. You have to admit, from speech to an intimacy between a man and a woman, that's... You know, you're really pushing it very far. And the Gemara is going to attack that Man D'Omer and says, how can you say that Medaberes means Nivala? Where do we find anywhere that the word Medaberes means Nivala? So I'm just giving you a little bit of what's coming around in this Gemara. Okay. So that's what we're going to see in the Gemara. Okay. Im Echad. All right, so she was together with this man. Again, either it means that she had yichud with this man, or it means that she had a relationship with this man, an intimacy. The Edom are testifying either A, that she had what? That she had yichud. Okay, that's going to be the shita in a minute of Zairi, of that it's called Misyachta, that's Medaberes, or according to the shita of Ravasi, it means that the Edom testified that she had a Be'ilah. Fi Amrullah. Now they turn to the woman. It's not clear who's actually turning to the woman. Is it Beis Din? Is it the Kohen who wants to marry this woman? Is it the Edom themselves? Because they couldn't identify the person. Ma tivo shel ish zeh. What's the nature of this person? What do you mean, what's the nature? We're not talking about his personality traits. We're not asking, is he an angry person? Or is he an easygoing guy? Is he a chassid or a litvak? Is he a Sephardi or an Ashkenazi? That's not what we're asking. Ma tivo shalish zem means, which category does he fill? There are two categories. He's either a apostle or a kosher. Apostle means he, through his relationship with her, disqualifies her for a Kohen. That means he's a goy. That means he's a mamzer, he's a nasin, maybe he's an erva to her. Or he's a kosher. Another word for a kosher is a Kohen. What does it mean he's a Kohen? Kohen is a catchphrase for anyone who's a kosher. Because Kohen is usually yichus, you know, so he's a miyuchas. And she says, ish ploni. She actually identifies him. Whoa, I mean, that's a little scandalous. The Kohen who? And again, we're going to have a machlokas here, what the word Kohen means. Is she adding the words for Kohen who? Kohen is a catchphrase for what? Kosher? Or no, we know that that person is a Kohen, he's a kosher. Right? She only tells me who he is. She can't testify that he's a kosher. We testify as a kosher. Now, if we accept her claim that the person that she had this relationship with is a miyuchas, he's not a mamzer, etc., etc., then she can marry a Kohen. But should we trust her? After all, she's hanky-panking around here. You know, she's not the greatest tzaddikus here. You know, this is not a Beis Yankov girl who recites Tzenera Ena three times a day. She's had a relationship out of wedlock with a man. So Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Eliezer, Omrim Nemenes. According to Rabbi Lozner and Rabbi Gamliel, she is believed, and we rely on her word, and a Kohen can now marry her. Again, we're not going to force a Kohen to marry her. If he says, I don't want to mess around over here, that's one thing. But he's technically allowed to marry her. Rabbi Yoshua disagrees. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, lo mi pia anu chayim. Literally, we don't live based on her word, the word of her mouth, meaning her claim is not reliable. She's already not so trustworthy, you know, if she's had this relationship. Ella, but rather, reizo becheskas beula lenosin ulamamzer. We're going to assume, again, the word chazak always indicates an assumption. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're absolutely certain about it, but we have a principle in Safek, we always have to go lechumra, Safek doraisa lechumra, ad shetavi raya lidvareha, until the Edim could testify that we saw the Boel, and we know that he's a kosher, we know he's a Kohen. If they cannot, in the absence of that testimony, we have a doubt. And in this case of doubt, we're going to assume the worst scenario, that she had be'ila with a mamzer, with a nasin. Now again, the nasinim are the, we discussed this in the past, are the descendants of the Givonim, you know, back in the time of Yehoshua. And these were people that tried to become part of the Jewish people, and Yehoshua made a gzeira on them that we should keep them far away because they were doing terrible things to the Jewish people and so forth and so on. So the difference between a mamzer and a nosin is only the following. Whereas a mamzer is a doraisa, and his relationship with her apostles to a coin doraisa as a zona, she becomes a zona doraisa. In the case of a nosin, she might be only psula midrabanan, because, and this depends upon whether the chachamim in fact recognize the geirus of the givonim. Let's assume that the geirus of the givonim was valid, but Rabbi Yeshua nevertheless gave them a din of psule kol. So it's only the rabbanon, but nevertheless midrabanan she becomes a zona because she had a relationship with a nosi. Frekta Gemara my midaberes. What does the word midaberes mean? So the Gemara quotes Ze'iri. Ze'iri Omar. Nistara. Nistara means she had yichud. She was alone with this man. Now, it cannot mean, says the Gemara, that midaberes means she was speaking to a man. If two witnesses see a girl speaking to a man, that doesn't make her into a zona, or even to a suffix zona. So Ze'iri and Rav Asi, we'll see in a minute, are both faced with this dilemma. How could it possibly be that just because she was midaberes, therefore we have a premise that she had relations with a man? How could that be? The Edom come and testify that she had a little bit of a schmooze with a guy, and therefore we're going to throw those Edom out of court. So we have to upgrade midaberes. She had a very intimate kind of speech. The Edom saw that she was speaking to a boy in a very closed, private room. That's called Nistara, that's called Yichud. Now, Rabosai, before I read to you a very important note here, which is based on the Tosus, I want to ask you the following question. Do we know that she had Be'ila, according to Ze'iri? If you take a look at Rav Asi, Rav Asi says, Omar Nivala, that the word Midaberes here means that the Edom saw that she had Be'ila. But according to Ze'iri, all the Edom could tell us that is that she what? She had Yichud. Now, how many jumps do you have to make? How many assumptions do you have to make in order to pasul halakuna as a zona now? Two assumptions, right? We have to assume, number one, that in that yichud, what happened? She had, anybody home? Be'ila, right? That's number one. And number two, we have to assume that who is the Boel? He was a mamzer or a nasin. What does that mean when in order to ask something, you have to make two assumptions? What's that called? Everybody? Svek Sveka, right? We discussed this at great length.
To be matir, not to ask her.
Correct? Here, I would be matir based on Svek Sveka, meaning if I accept Ze'iri, there's something very strange going on over here. Number one, I don't even know if she had Be'ila to begin with. Number two, even if she did have Be'ila, I have no way of proving that was with a guy, your mom's there, a nasin, etc., and she became psul lakuna. So Ze'iri is the most radical shita here in this Mishnah. From a halachic perspective, we're going to be machmir that a Kohen can't marry this woman just because she was alone with a man, and this man is not identifiable. That's enough that we're going to assume that she didn't just go into a private place with this man, but she had actually consummated a relationship with this man. And number two, we're going to assume that this faceless, anonymous man who flew the coop was indeed a mamzer and a nosin.
Didn't we say a few weeks ago, mazer also bekohen, there's a special...
Oh, perhaps this is my loss to bekohen. But from a perspective of pure halacha, Zairi is very way out here, and Rav Asi calms us down. Rav Asi says there's only one suffix, because the Edom actually saw Be'ila. Again, the Gemara is going to ask in a minute, how can we possibly assume that the Mishnah uses the term Medaberes to mean Nivala? I mean, what's the connection? But before we see that Gemara, I want to present to you. You see this Tosfos V'Ein, okay? And on Amud Beis is a Tosfos of Heishavtanu. There's long discussions here in Tosfos, and basically, the bottom line of this Tosfos and the Tosfos on Amud Beis is the following: that according to Zairi, the only reason we're going to pasul hola kahuna is because she admits that she had a relationship. The Edom don't know that she had this intimate relationship, correct? What did the Edom see according to Zairi?
Just
Yichud. So how do we know that she had Be'ila? So we said, it's a suffix. No, it's not a suffix. Why is it not a suffix? Because she herself admits that she had Be'ila. Where does it say in the Mishnah that she admitted that she had Be'ila? It implies it. Why does it imply it? Where do you see the remez in the Mishnah that she confesses to having Be'ila, even though the Edom only saw Yichud? What?
Ishponi.
Correct, Ishponi. She's saying that this was the Boel.
She's not
She's saying that this Boel was a kosher, he was a Kohen, but she admits that she had Be'ila. In other words, when we accuse her, we're suspicious that she had Be'ila, according to Ziri, all we saw was Yichud, she confesses to the crime. But she claims, I'm still not a Zona, I'm still kosher lakuna. Says Tosfos, that when she says Ish Ploni v'Kohen Hu, and she's molded that she was Nivala, Rabbi Yoshua in our Mishnah says she can no longer marry a Kohen. Why? Even though she's claiming she had Be'ila with a kosher, because we assume that in a case where she admits that she had Be'ila, we only have one suffix. Was the Boel a kosher apostle? Says Rabbi Yeshua, we're not going to trust her. In a case of a bona fide single suffix, we don't believe her. Comes along Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Gamliel, and they say we're going to believe her. Why? Says Tosfos, wow, this is wild. She has a migu. Now, migu is a concept that we borrow from Dine Mominus. As I said at the outset in my introduction, we're not dealing with Dine Mominus. In Dine Mominus, we have mamigu. Let's say, for example, you claim that I owe you 1,000, and I admit that I owe you 500. I have a migu because you don't have a shtar. You have no proof that I borrowed $1,000. I could have denied the whole bit, the whole kit and caboodle. I never borrowed. I don't know you. So trust me when I say that I only borrowed $5,000 and I only owe you $5,000. Or for example, there's a famous case where a man comes with a shtar that's not mekuyam. He didn't do a kiyam on the shtar. And the malva says, look, the shtar says that you owe me $1,000. You borrowed $1,000. And the lova says, I paid you back. That's called parati migu de mizuyav. If the lova was lying, he would have told him, fly a kite. This whole shtar is just a forfeit. It's a ziyuf. A forgery. It's a forgery. And he's believed, as long as the shtar is any makuyim, to say it's a forged shtar. Tosfos wants to borrow this concept of migu and grafted onto Iser Veheter. Meaning, just like in Dine Mominus, we believe you because if you were a liar, you would have given us a better lie. You had a simple lie in your back pocket. Why did you get yourself all complicated, you know, histamachtev and so forth and so on? You must be telling the truth. In other words, Migu gives you Nemonus. Comes along Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Gamliel and Mishnah, they say, here she has a Migu. Since the Edom, according to Ziri, only saw what? yichud. It was only her own admission. She put her foot into her mouth by saying, yes, I had be'ilo. Then let's trust her when she says that the bowl was so-and-so. Rabbi Yeshua says, once she bridges the gap from yichud to be'ilo by admission, then we're left with one suffix. Lo mi pi'anu chayim. I'm not interested in migus. I'm not interested in trustworthy. She had relations with another man. She admits to so. And therefore, she is not believed. That is the opinion of Tosfos here. So let me just read this to you. He says the following. That even though, as far as the Edom are concerned, Yeshkan Sfek Sveka, because we don't know that she had Be'ila. But Kevan Shemoda, Ish Ploni Vekoinu, that she had Be'ila, therefore she reduces it to Unsafek. Rabbi Yeshua Osra Misafek. Shema Haboel Hayapostle. He says the following. Aval, what would happen in the following scenario? The Edom say that we saw she had Yichud. Vehi Toeneshalo Nivala Klal. She didn't have Be'ila at all. She denies the whole Be'ila story. Then even Rabbi Yeshua would agree that she's allowed to marry a Kohen. Why? Because now we have two Sfeikas. Number one, we still don't know if she had Be'ila. Number two, we don't identify the Boel. So again, just to summarize Tosfos. Tosfos is saying the following. That Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yeshua, excuse me, I keep saying Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Gamliel are of the opinion that she's believed, because the only reason we produce and detonate the Sfek Sveka and we know that she had Be'ila is because of her own admission. Therefore, we're going to believe it and say that she had Be'ila with a Kohen, with a Kasher. Rabbi Yeshua says that once she already bridged that gap, and we know that she had Be'ila by her own admission, therefore we've reduced the Sfek Sveka to one Sfek. But, says Tosfos, in a Zah Ofen, where she denies that she had Be'ila, even Rabbi Yeshua would agree that she's believed, because we have a Sfek Sveka. And that's in the case where she denies that she had Be'ila. However, he has a long list of Rishonim that disagree with Tosfos. The Rov Rishonim, Avodas Rov Rishonim Eino Kein Ela Af Bito Enes Lo Nivalti Psula Lidas Rabbi Yeshua. Look how far Rabbi Yeshua goes. And this is where I think Tadiyah we're going to have to introduce my loss of Yuchsin, my loss of Akainim. What does Rabbi Yeshua say? Do we have any evidence that she had Be'il at all? No evidence. We only know that she had Yichud. Number two, did she admit that she had Be'ila? No, she didn't admit that she had Be'ila. She's denying that she had Be'ila. So based on the fact that two Aiden testified that she had Yichud with some unknown faceless guy, and honestly, we can't identify him, she can no longer marry a Kohen. There's an assumption that she is a Zona, Nivola, Lepasola, even though we have two Sfeikas. We really have a bona fide something where she had Be'ila Bechlal. And even if she did have a Be'ila, who says that the Boel was a Pasol Kuhun? Af b'toenes lo nivalti poseles, according to all the Rishonim except for Tosfos, l'das Rabbi Yeshua. U'mishnasenu, according to these Rishonim, bein b'toenes nivalti, u'bein b'toenes lo nivalti. U'bishneem, even if she admits that she had Be'ila, das Rabbi Gamliel shenemenes, das Rabbi Yeshua shenemenes. V'af al gav, demode Rabbi Yeshua b'sfek sfeka. Why should Rabbi Yeshua deny the universal principle of Sfek Sveka here? So again, we want to be machmir for Kohanim. That's great. But why would that undermine the principle of Sfek Sveka? And he says the following. Kevan dinis yachta, once she had yichud with another man, ein apotropos larayis. The gap between yichud and be'ila is like the snap of a finger. It's a very narrow gap. Ein apotropos larayis. What does that mean literally? Apotropos is someone who's meant to supervise. In this context, it means a chaperone. There are no chaperones over here. She's alone with a man. Why did she go into that yichud with a man? Again, if there's reason to believe she didn't know that it was a closed place, fine, maybe that would be different. But if we have reason to believe that she went in there for intimacy, ein apotropos larayis. Once the Yetzer Hara gets the best of you, you're a goner. V'harei zekilu v'adai nivola. The invadai nivula sofer of Yeshua the enkan ella sofek echad. So according to this slew of Rishonim that disagree with Tosfos, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Lezer are arguing about the following question: Is Yichud a bona fide suffix or no? Yichud leads to an assumption on our part that she had be'ila because ain't up a trouble slarayas. Then the question really becomes: do we have a svexfik or one suffix? That's in the case which she says lo divalti. Rabbi Yeshua goes very far. He says once the Edom see Yichud, that they went into a place in a very intimate privacy, we assume she had ve'ila, and never troubles la rayas. Mevela, we reduce it to one suffix. According to Rabbi Lozon, on the other hand, to bridge the gap between Yichud and ve'ila requires determining a suffix. And now we have another suffix on top, even if she had ve'ila, was the Boel apostle or not. Even though we know that she had Be'ila, but that's by virtue of her own confession, then she has a Migu because she could have denied that she had Be'ila. Had she denied she had Be'ila, according to her Belosa, she would certainly be believed because then we have a Sfexfeik. So even though now we only have Lemais and one Safek, but we have Nemonis. We have credibility. Why do we give her credibility that the Boel was so and so who's a Kohen? Because she could have denied the whole thing. Rav Yeshua says no, according to all these Rishonim. Rav Yeshua says that Yichud is considered one suffix and only one suffix. Because saying Alpha Tropos Larai saying Yichud means Vade Nivola. But Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos is of the opinion that if she denies that she had Bila, even Rav Yeshua agrees that she's Muteris L'Kohen, because even Rav Yeshua agrees that Yichud is only a suffix Bila. Add to that the other suffix of who the bowl was, and you have a Sfek Sfek. Rav Yeshua doesn't Aser Hol L'Kohen, but Torah Zone in a case of a Sfek Sfek. Where's the Machlokas as Tosfos between Rav Yeshua and Rav Lezer? That's only in the case where she admits that she had Bila, reducing it to one suffix. Whereas Rabbi Lazar is willing to give an emunus to say that the Boel was a kosher because of Migu, Rabbi Yeshua denies the trustability and the reliability of a Migu. Migu belongs to the world of what? Of Dine Mominus. And Dine Mominus of monetary law. Nobody denies that. That's all over Shas, all over Nezikin. But Migu does not apply to Isavet. And here I would mention to you a very famous chiddush of Rav Shimon Shkop, if you heard of Rav Shimon Shkop. I don't know if he ever lived in South Africa, but he was a Litvak, so he's a half South African. What did Rav Shimon Shkop have to say? My father missed his shiur by 1 year.
He was at YU,
but my father was too young to go into his shiur. My father's good buddy, his name was Rabbi Silver. He was a year older than my father. They let him into Rav Shimon Shia when he was very young, Rabbi Silver. His first name I forget right now. But his father was Rabbi Lezer Silver. The son of the rabbi from Harrisburg is my good friend Aaron Silver, who's a neighbor of mine and a classmate of mine from high school, who's a Rebbe in Kerem Yavne. He's a big, big Lamdan. So his father was in Rav Shimon Shkop's shia. At the age of 16, I think, they let him into the shia. My father was 15, they didn't let him into the shia. And, you know, my friend Aaron Silva always adds that my father had a big problem because after Rav Shimon left, Rav Shimon was in the yeshiva for about 8-9 months, and then he went back to Europe. It was very hard for his father because then they hired Rav Moshe Soloveitchik to be the Magid Shir, and Rav Moshe was not as charismatic as Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon built the Shir in such a way that he would draw the Talmidim into the logic. Whereas Rav Moshe came in, he only gave a Shir for about 35 minutes and he belted out the whole Shir. There was only one Talmid, my father said, he used to fight with Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, Yom HaLayla, and that was Chaim Tzimmerman. Did you know Chaim Tzimmerman? He was my father's close childhood friend. He was a character. If there ever was a character on the face of the earth, it was Chaim Tzimmerman. My mother tried to cut his hair. He never took haircuts. So he was sleeping on the couch in our living room. My mother tried to cut his hair, and he woke up, and he got very angry. He was a sketch. But Rav Shimon Shkop wants to say the following. Not in this context. Again, in Ezekiel, you know, he says that You know why Migu is reliable? It's not a psychological svar. It's a koach hataina. What's koach hataina? Koach hataina means that if I have, according to the halacha, a taina nemenes, a taina that in and of itself is believed. For example, if you produce a shtar against me, and the shtar is eno makuyim, and I can say mezuyov, then al pidin, says Rav Shimon, I own that mamon. You have no claim to that money. And therefore, even if I put forward another claim, that koach, that power that I have to that moment is now transferred into another claim. So we go from one taina to another taina. So even if I don't say mezuyah, but instead I say parati, I'm believed with the same koach of nemonis as if I said mezuyah. And there are many nafkaminas to this chakira. In any event, the Gemara right away pounces upon Zeir. The Gemara says the following. I'm sorry, pounces upon Ravasi. Ravasi Omar Nival. Ravasi says that the reason why Rav Yeshua says she's Asura in our Mishnah to Kohanim, and the premise is that she's a Zona, and she had Be'ilah to a Apostle, is because we know that she had Be'ilah. It reduces it from two Sfekas down to one Sfek. No, so what does the word Medaberes mean? It means Nivala? Like, that's a real stretch. Says the Gemara, Bishleim Elizeiri, Hainu de Ketani Medaberes. We can understand that the word Medaberes means she was speaking to him in a very private and intimate sort of a way. That's Yichud. El Ravasi, my Medaberes. How could it be that the Mishnah used the word Medaberes and the intention of the Mishnah is Be'ilah? So the Gemara answers that sometimes the Mishnah uses what's called a Lashon Nekir. What do you say?
Euphemism.
A euphemism. Yeah, a language that shouldn't be too explicit.
Children are learning Mishnahs.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, I didn't
copy you. I'm a second grader. In other words, children are learning.
Right, but you can't...
It has to be rated G for that crowd.
Right, but I don't know if this is rated G because you can't mislead them. And you know, okay, I don't know. Maybe in that case you have to mislead them. I wouldn't falsify the Torah. I'd rather skip the Mishnah. But then they go home and they learn the Mishnah on their own. You know, like the story of David Batsheva. What do we do when our Rebbe skipped the Perek of David Batsheva? We went home and all of us were on the phone with each other trying to learn the Parashat together. So I think it accomplished just the opposite of they wanted to do it. Like we used to take our Talmidei Teilat. Many yeshivas refused to take the Talmidei Teilat. We felt, Max, in your day, did we go Teilat?
I don't remember.
You don't remember. So, but generally speaking, I don't know, in your year, we took the boys' Teilat for 3 days. And other yeshivas refused to do that because Teilat is full of preachers. But we felt, they're going to go to Teilat anyway. So we might as well take them Teilat. You know what I'm saying? And supervise them.
Super Bowl was always the big hit.
So we also had a Super Bowl for the guys. Again, it was, I think, at 2 in the morning, wasn't it? It was wild.
I did not participate.
Actually,
you read us at Doris, right? So I'm just wondering, you know, in terms of rated G, how are you going to teach this Mishnah? Because according to Ravasi, the word medaberes here is a lashon nekiah for nivala. So I don't know, you're going to fool the children, maybe. You know, the Gemara says about Basra, it's a terrible thing to fool children. Because Shaveshta came with the all. And the Gemara says that that's why, you know, there was someone who misread the word Zecher, what does it say in the Pasuk? Zecher Amolek, and he misread it to Zecher Amolek, and once the mistake goes in, you know, it sticks there, you know. So the Gemara says, why is the word Medaberes a, you know, you can't just come up with a new word, there's got to be some meaning. The Mishnah reviewed that Nasi uses a word. My Medaberes Nivala Lishna Mialia Kirichsiv. The Gemara quotes a pasuk, and what does the pasuk say? Achla. I think this is a pasuk in Mishle. Let me see if I'm right. Do you have it in Torah R here? Anyway, Mishle. Okay. So what does the pasuk say? Achla umachasapia v'amra lo paalti oven. And that pasuk is talking about a woman who had a what do you say?
the beginning of the pasuk, ki kein derech isha,
right,
mina efes.
So this is a case of a woman who had an illegal, illegitimate relationship, and Omra, and she says lo palti often. You know, she denies the whole story. She tries to cover up for herself, even though in truth she had this relationship. So you see that the organ in the body that's used in this pasuk is the mouth. You know, ochla. Achla umachasapia. Achla means that she had this relationship. Umachasapia, and then she wipes her mouth so that you can't see any crumbs or saliva or whatever coming out of her mouth. Bishlema lizairi, hainu diketani tarte midaberes umeuberes. Okay. So let's go back to the Mishnah again. You remember that the Mishnah has a Reisha and a Sefer. The Sefer of the Mishnah says, Haisa Muberes. Now, in a case of Muberes, there's no question about the fact that she had Be'ila. Correct? But if you go with Ravasi, even in the Reisha, there's no question that she had Be'ila. Because the Eidim testified to that effect. So the Gemara is going to now attack Ravasi that the Mishnah is repeating itself. Bishlemel is Ze'iri, according to Ze'iri, that the Reish is telling us that she only, according to the Eidim could only testify and establish that she had Yichud. So that's a Gevaldige Chiddush of Rabbi Yeshua, that even though the Eidim could only testify to the fact that she had Yichud, nevertheless, she's Psula L'Kohen. And now the Sefer comes to tell me that if we know that she had Be'ila because she's Muberes, then there's only one Suffolk, and nevertheless from Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer, for some strange reason, say Nemenes, that we're going to trust her to say that the Boel was a Kohen, he was a Kosher. So we can justify both the Reisha and the Sefer. Bishlem is the Iri Haina de Ketoni Tarate. We need both the Reisha and the Sefer. But Reisha is the case of Medaberes. And the Sefer is the case of Meuberes. And in each case, we're telling you a different Chiddush. In Medaberes, we're telling us how far Rabbi Yeshua is willing to be Machmir. In Muberes, we're telling you how far Rabbi Eliezer is willing to be Mekil and rely on her claim. El Ravasi, but if we go with Ravasi, Tarti Lomali, why did the Mishnah need both? In both cases, we have a Birur, we have an absolute certainty that she had Be'ila, which means we reduce it to one suffix. Was the Boel a Kosher or Apostle? Now, before we read the Gemara's answer, I'd like to share with you another note over here to summarize Tosus Divra Maschil Ravasi. Okay, then that's the top Tosfos on the page. So if you take a look in Tosfos, you'll see that Ravasi Omar Nivola. Why did Ravasi completely avoid the interpretation of Ze'ira, that Ze'iri says that all the Edom saw was Yichud? Says Tosfos, as we discussed earlier, Moda Aval Nistara, according to Ravasi, there would be no Machlokes if the Edom only saw Yichud, according to Ravasi. Moda Rabbi Yeshua din Emenes Loma Lakosha Nivalti Migu Di Boy Omra Lo Nivalti. So Tosfos assumes, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that even Rabbi Yeshua would accept her Emanus to say that Lakosha Nivalti if she had a Migu, and she could have denied the Be'ilah. Now, let's go according to those Rishonim that insist that according to Ze'iri, she's not believed to say lo nivalti. Why? Because once she had this yichud, remember we assume according to Rabbi Yeshua that ein apotropos l'arayos, and that reduces it from two stakers down to one suffix. So he says, Mikomakom, Bidas Rav Asi, Kosar Rishonim, She Binistra Nemenis Lomer Lonif Alti. The Einon Utolim She Nivola Bivadai, Ulafichach Nemenis Bimigu Shahoisi Yechola Lomar Lonif Alti. In other words, everything that we've said until now makes sense according to Ze'iri. Correct, according to Zairi, what did the Edom see? Rabosa, can you help me out over here? What did the Edom see? Yichud, right? That's all they saw was Yichud. So then we're going to have to assume in the framework of Rabbi Yoshua that Rabbi Yoshua equates Yichud with Nivala and reduces it and changes it to Avada, therefore reducing this to a single suffix. That's good according to Zairi. But the Rishonim would agree that Rav Asi maintains that in the case of Yichud, Rabbi Yeshua would agree that she's believed with a migu. Why? Because if she had denied that she had Be'ilah, that would engender a double suffix. And we're not willing to say, according to Rav Asi, that Rabbi Yeshua maintains that we can bridge the gap from Yichud to Be'ilah and assume that every time there was Yichud, there was a Vadei Be'ilah. And therefore the suffix that maybe she did not in fact consummate this Yichud with a Be'ilah is a very real suffix. Is Memela, according to Rav Asi, even Rabbi Yeshua would agree that if she says Lo Nivalti, if she says, I'm sorry, Lakasha Nivalti, she would be believed with a Migu that she could have denied that she had Be'ilah. So keep in mind, Rabbi Osei, that Migu that we see here in Tosfos, Dibra Master of Asi, is on a different level than the Migu that we see in Tosfos, Dibra Master of Vien. The Chiddush of Tosfos, Dibra Master of Vien, is a questionable Chiddush, because Tosfos is going according to Zairi. Right? And Zairi is the one who tells us that according to Rabbi Yeshua, a Sofek Be'ilah, in the case of Yichud, becomes a Vadai Nivala. So the whole discussion about Migu is a little bit questionable. But on the other hand, in Rav Asi's frame of reference, which is the Tosfos on the top of the page, there we're talking about the reason that Rav Asi rejected Zairi. The reason Rav Asi rejected Zairi is because Rav Asi is of the opinion that even Rabbi Yeshua would agree that if all the Edom could testify is only Yichud, then we still have an additional suffix as to whether or not she had Be'ilah. And therefore, if she says L'kasha Nivalti, even Rabbi Yeshua would agree that she's believed with a Migu. So again, Rabosai, if we want to ask the question whether or not she should be believed with a migu to say lo nivalti, it really depends upon this machlokas between Zairi and Rav Asi. Zairi is saying that she's not believed according to Rabbi Yeshua, no way, no how, even though all the Edom could testify is on Yichud and not on Be'ilah. But once there's Yichud, there's an assumption of Be'ilah, and then there's only one suffix, and therefore lo mipi anu chayim, according to Rabbi Yeshua. Whereas according to Rav Asi, he cannot tolerate Zairi's approach, because he maintains that Yichud, if all the Edom could testify is on Yichud, it still remains a suffix Be'ilah, and therefore we can introduce a svek sveka, and even Rabbi Yeshua would agree that she's believed with a migu. Now we get back to the following question. According to Rav Asi, if the Edom in fact testified in the Reisha that they saw that she had Be'ilah, just they can't testify and identify who the Boel was, then what's the difference between the Reisha and the Sefer? The Sefer is nothing more than a repeat performance of what we have in the Reisha. Says the Gemara, Chado lahachshir ba, v'chado lahachshir bebita. Okay. So let's go slowly here. Chado lahachshir ba, we're talking about the Reisha of our Mishnah, is going to teach us that Rabbi Gamliel allows the woman herself to marry a Kohen. However, what about her daughter? Can she marry a Kohen? Now, you and I would have said intuitively that if she can marry a Kohen, it means we're assuming that she had Be'ilah with a Kasha, correct?
Isn't this a problem of Eidus Nashim here?
So you're asking a different question.
I'm saying on herself, that's valid din, but on her daughter, how can we have the Eidus?
But I'm asking you a different question, Daniel. Maybe your question is very valid, but before we get to your question, why are you believing her? Because you're assuming that she had Be'ilah with a Kasha. Right? According to her Belos. No, if she had Be'ilah with a Kasha, then what's the status of her daughter? She also has Kshera Lekuhun. So my question to you is, and Daniil, you're making another point, which has, but I'm just, you know, my brain is just on a different, So why does the Mishnah have to tell me in the Sefer when she's pregnant that the girl that she gives birth to is allowed to marry a Kohen? If you've already matted the mother to marry a Kohen, you would match her because we believe her word that this was the Boel and he is a Kosher. Then once you've done so, if so facto her child, her daughter is allowed to marry a Kohen. So what does Gemara mean when it says Chada, meaning the Sefer is Lahakshe v'bita? So here are both, so we have to go back to basics. Why in fact does Rabbi Lezer believe her and allows her to marry a Kohen? After all, we have reason to believe that she's Asura Lekohen. Again, we're going to Rav Asi, and Rav Asi says that, well, forget about Rav Asi, even leave out Rav Asi, we're talking about Muberes. So Muberes means, how many sphikas do we have in the case of Muberes? Only one. So for sure she should be Asura Lekohen, and that's Rabbi Yeshua's position. Why does Rabbi Loza say we're going to rely on her? And again, there's no Migu over here.
Rely on her to say that it was a kusher that she had. Is that...
There was a kasha that she had be'ilah
right,
with.
Right. We shouldn't want
so to. Maybe you say that from the Bisuri, maybe Daniel's right, that she's... what was your language? That she's believed on herself?
Adas Paldin on herself, but not on something.
Well, no, usually Adas Paldin is when you mode that you're chayef. Here she's claiming that she's still Chera Lakuna. Right? So I don't know if Adas Paldin... But there is another discussion here, which we're not ready for yet, called Bari V'Sheva. Okay, so fine. Oh, apparently there's another variable in this sukkah, and I'm learning with the Olam here twice a week Masechta Nida. This is like the central concept in Masechta Nida, which is called a cheskas tahara, a chazak. In other words, every person has the right to maintain a certain status in Allah until we prove otherwise. Innocent until proven guilty. Somebody told me the French don't buy into that. I don't know. But as a general rule, a person is innocent until proven guilty. Here also, this woman, until she had this relationship, was assumed to be Muteris Lekohen. She's Ksheri Lekohen. That establishes a Cheskas Taro, a Cheskas Heter, a Cheskas Likud. Now she had Be'ila. So what? Maybe she had Be'ilo with a Kohen, with a Kosher. Says Rabbi Loza, therefore she's Nemenis. Oh. But the Bas is much more complicated. Why is the status of her daughter more complicated? What is she lacking that the mother has? A Chazaka? Because from the very moment that she's born into this world, we don't know if she's a Ksheira or not. It all depends upon whether her mother had a relationship with a guy, for example, or a Nusin or a Mamzer, or with a Kosher. So in the Halachas of Safek, we have a din of Chazaka, but it only applies when a person comes to the table with their Chazaka. Bishleim in the mother, with regard to the mother, she comes to the table with a Chazaka. She has a right to say, look, you have no right to assume that I had be'ilu with a pasul, I became psula. I always was kshera. Trust me that I didn't become a psula. But in the case of the daughter, which is the Mishnah in Muberes, the Sefer of that Mishnah, the daughter never came to the table with her chazaka. She could never boast that she had one moment of chazaka in her life. Because from the very second of her inception into this world, she already was in a suffix situation.
When the halacha said once the mother is established as a tamer, so then the child is as well. In other words,
correct. So this is what we're going to have to analyze, not tonight, but maybe next week. What is Rabbi Lazar saying? Rabbi Lazar admits that the daughter has no chasok, and yet from Desvegan he says that she's Ksheira Lakuna. Is Rabbi Lazar saying that she's Ksheira Lakuna because we believe the mother?
Right.
The mother's nemanis is like objective nemanis, like two avim. Or is he saying something else with what Ravaran was saying, that the cheskas ha'ema hani labas, that it's enough for the mother to have a chazaka, and she somehow bequeaths that chazaka to her child?
I would even say it that way. I would say once the halacha established in the halachic universe, once it establishes that the mother is, so that's So you can't go back on that any longer. In other words, the halacha has established that means the child is as well. In other words,
but it's
now
very
you're questioning the halacha. You're saying, well, the halacha didn't work here.
But it's very interesting. You could have situations where two people go through the exact same suffix. In other words, the scenario is the same for two people. For one, we're going to pass in the one way, and for the other, the exact opposite. Why? Because one person had a chazak and the other person didn't have a chazak. And the Gemara is going to operate with the following mechanism. It's called Chezkas Ha'em Mahani Labas. And that's a very strange halacha. But in any event, just to read, you know, because we're going to have to go to Meir very soon.
Labas means that it trickles down to her? That what does that mean? That line?
I don't know. That's what we're going to have to analyze. I'm just telling you, you know, thank God it's time for Meir, because this is previews of coming attractions. How does Rabbi Lozer go as far as to say that even the Bas is Muteris Lekohen when she's born without a Chazoka?
More radical to say otherwise. I mean,
that would make you should just come ask all these always have stupid questions, you know.
About the parents, you know.
About the parents.
Okay. So maybe they're not so stupid, you know. You want to make sure you're marrying a Kshera, especially if you're a Kohen, right? So you want to ask questions. I mean, you and I might say, well, what makes the marriage successful? It's the love between him and her. Who cares about the parents? But it doesn't work that way. Because halakhically, we have to know about the parents. Certainly from the yichus of the parents. Especially in our contemporary life, where it's a hefkevelt out there. That's why the Rabbanut here goes crazy. Chumras upon chumras. You can live in Johannesburg or Cape Town for 50 years as a frumi yid. You're a pillar of the community. You come to Eretz Yisrael, you want to get married, or your children want to get married, and they will investigate your tzitzis until they finally give you. And again, it's obviously creating a certain, you know, what's the word I want to use? You know, boomerang in terms. Yeah, the tension.
No, well, I mean, if you're going to have a non-frivolous,
but I wouldn't go. I wouldn't go, Brian, as far as the other extreme to say that we don't care about the parents.
You know,
we
no, don't give me.
We have to establish.
There's no one thing before we close. Yeah. Is a koi not allowed to marry if he doesn't know about it? He gets married.
Yes.
And he marries a girl that had a relationship before.
Right.
And is he allowed to marry? Is he allowed to continue with the relationship?
That depends on our mission. Me, she had a relationship before.
Yeah.
Who did she have the relationship with? We don't know.
We don't know.
According to Rabbi Yeshua, we assume she had a relationship with the apostle. We're going to have to bust up this marriage. The Kohen cannot marry. We thought she's Bechezkas Zon. I'm not paskening because Baruch Hashem, we have Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Gamliel, and they insist that we assume she had a relationship with a kosher. But wait a minute. Keep in mind, Brian, that even Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Gamliel are only willing to be matir her to Kohen because she claims that this was the Boel. Now, you may have a whole other set of circumstances of, let's say, a woman who had multiple relationships during the course of her life, let's say she's a Balas Tshuva, and she marries a Kohen. Now it's getting very complicated, because can she tell us and testify about every single Boel? And we're going to go back into the, you know, into history, and we're going to investigate every possible Boel that she had Be'ilu with, and determine that they were all Ksherim. Imagine she's telling you first and foremost that every man that she had a relationship with was Jewish. This is even before we get into the question of checking out his status. But that he was Jewish. So therefore, Kohenim have to be very, very careful. And this is true even Bizman Azeh. Now the question about whether our Kohenim are really Kohenim or not is another issue. You know, there are some Rishonim 5 centuries ago who claim that our Kohenim don't have a Cheskes Kohuna. And even though we'll be Machmir, we'll tell them not to go to Beis HaKvaris and not to marry a Grusha, etc., etc., that's only a Chumrah. And therefore we can be Makel in Sveikis. But the bulk of the Poskim assume that our Kohenim, again, I'm not posking for Pidgin or Ben, we know how you choose your Kohenim, but most Rishonim assume that even Bizman Azeh, even though you can't trace the lineage of the Kohen back to the Mizbeah, we still assume a Cheskas Kohuna.
This was a big issue.